Welcome, listeners. I'm glad you are here.
Welcome back to another episode of the Live Vegan Podcast. This is episode 20. I'm your host, Kevin Leahy. And if you're joining us for the first time, this is a podcast dedicated to learning from inspirational guests and discussing how to be a more effective activist within the growing animal rights movement. We are joined once again by our friend and co-host, Ben Lois. What's up, Ben?
Hey, Kevin. How's it going? I'm excited for this week because I need to start on a health kick. So,
yeah. Well, this is a great guest to get you inspired. His name is Dominic Thompson. You might also know him as Dom Z on social media. He is an athlete, an activist, and a plant-based bodybuilder. He is the CEO of Crazies and Weirdos. You've probably seen him on social media wearing a t-shirt that reads, "Eat what elephants eat." Or, my personal favorite, "Clark Kent was vegan." Now that phrase, "Clark Kent was vegan," is so powerful to me. By the way, if you don't know, Clark Kent is Superman for those non-comic book aficionados. But I think everyone knows that. But this phrase, it speaks incredibly to Dom's transformative story, as he was not always a vegan activist. But it's also so crucial because I want the listeners to think about this for a second. Eating meat causes great suffering to animals, the planet, and ourselves. And eating meat is completely unnecessary. Vegans are just as healthy, if not healthier. So I want you to think about your childhood heroes. Maybe your DC or Marvel comic book heroes. Maybe your political or religious leaders. Maybe a big brother, an older cousin, a great friend whom you greatly respect. What would this person say about causing unnecessary suffering? Isn't that exactly what superheroes use to their power to prevent? Isn't that exactly what draws the difference between a superhero and a supervillain? Fighting and sacrificing for the good of others are the characteristics of what make a hero a hero. Taking a stand when it's unpopular because it's the right thing to do is what makes a leader a good leader. And for me, this is the appeal of Dom Thompson. He's someone I look up to myself because he's not scared to stand up for what's right. So Dominic Thompson, welcome to the show and thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, fellas. I really appreciate that. So honored to be on this podcast. I'm looking forward to really diving into some very important information and where we are currently in the community and where I think we're going in the future. So thank you for having me.
Awesome. Well, we're excited to have this chat. And one of the main reasons we wanted to have you on is, I mean, there's a lot of plant-based athletes out there. There's a lot of plant-based bodybuilders. And, you know, it's great to show that, you know, you can have a amazing physique eating just plants. But the reason we wanted to have you on is because you're not just a plant-based athlete. You're a vegan activist who happens to also be, you know, an athlete in incredible shape. So could you maybe take us back, you know, maybe back to the beginning, where did you reach, you know, where tell us about your awakening? When did you become vegan? Why did you become vegan? And was health a focus for you at that time? Did health, you know, kind of come later? What was your transformation like?
Yeah, actually, health was definitely not my focus. That was not my reason for completely stopping eating meat at that time. It was mainly for the animals and for to do all I can to stop any harm or contribute to any negative energy. It really starts with when I was 21, 22. In fact, let me back up a little bit. It goes further. When I was about 8 years old, living in Chicago, on the west side of Chicago, my mother, she would feed us different foods, but what she can afford, but she would feed us quite often chicken wings. And chicken wings, to me, at that age, I viewed them as if they was almost little bitty arms. Because when you think about it, they have the corners there, they have the cartilage in there, they have the bones. and you start pulling that apart, you see even the veins filled with dead blood. And that was just gross to me. I was just like, I can't do this. And I used to push back to her and fight with her a lot. And she eventually started, just as an alternative, would feed me fish sticks or chicken breasts. So anything where there's an abundance of just white flesh or meat per se, animal meat, visually I felt as a kid that was okay. But I still was in tune with that, you know. And even I was one of the kids growing up in Chicago. I had friends and associates and all types of people involved in some negative activities. But some of my earliest memories with respect to being active and not allowing people to bully or take advantage or harm animals was, I had friends or people on the block that would throw stray rocks at stray cats, squirrels, you know, boys just being boys and really hurting some of these animals. And I intervene and just say, nah, enough is enough. That's not cool. So I always had a problem with people taking advantage of animals. Fast forward into later on to my young adult life, I got indicted and arrested for drug charges. I am a former gang member as well as a former drug dealer. In Chicago, and that lifestyle itself caught up with me when I was around 22. And I was in college at the time. I was finishing school at the time. And it was cliche, just like a movie, where it was one of those scenarios where it's one more situation, one more score, per se, without me going into too many details. And I eventually committed that crime, that landed me in prison. And it was there in prison I was trying to figure out why the universe was putting me in this position. Rationally speaking, I mean, obviously, there's a cause and effect. I mean, I did something. This is the consequences. It was against the law. But what I did was, and without me going into many details, it wasn't a situation that I felt at the time deserved that severe of a punishment, meaning I'd never been in trouble with the law. I never even had a speeding ticket up until that point. But it just so happened the consequences required me to go away for some years. So I'm just trying to make sense of everything that happened, because everything happened so fast, from my pretrial to my conviction to me not being able to say goodbye to my family. They just took me away. And it was there that I just made that connection, that same memory as a kid. And I realized I need to stop harming things. I need to stop contributing to any negative energy. And what that means, destroying animals or destroying communities with poison, which was drugs at the time. So I went plant-based in prison around, and when I went to prison, I was 22.
So was there someone in prison that helped you realize that, or is it just kind of a realization you came to on your own?
Came to it on my own. There was no one in prison. Oh. Listen, prison is a lot like the movie, except for in the feds, excluding the rapes and the gang violence is not as intense. When you're in the feds, you're in there with an abundance of criminals that do white collar crimes. You're in there with soldiers that went AWOL. You're in there with bank robbers, Italian mob bosses. You're in there with kingpins. You name it. People that was pretty much high up or at a peak in their career, decision makers, if you will. And so that. When you're in that type of group, in that type of nucleus, people tend to keep to themselves. And there are some people in there that I met, but the influences stopped there. There wasn't too much influencing going on. And like I said, I got on my knees. It was the first week. I remember like it was yesterday. I got on my knees. I'm a spiritual guy, but at that time I wouldn't define it as being religious, but I got on my knees and prayed to God. and meditating in a way and pray to my ancestors, because that was not what I was about. I don't only pray to a higher energy, I pray to my former bloodlines that I never had a chance to meet, and those that I did meet. And I was just trying to figure out, man, I was trying to figure out, like, you know, what have I done to be put here for so long? Because my sentence was really a 5-year sentence, and post-prison was like, oh, it was like a four or five, another additional sentence. So you're looking at about a 9 to 10 year sentence, and I'm just trying to figure out, no first-time offender, no violence, nothing like that, 22, 23. I'm just trying to make sense of it, like why I had to stay here so long. And everything pointed to that, you know, obviously the consequences, but just that negative energy. Like, I feel like if the universe shows you something, no matter your age, I don't care how young you are responsible for taking that opportunity and running with it, meaning you need to really absorb it and do something about it and accept it. And I feel like by me allowing that moment I had as an 8-year-old boy to kind of pass by, this is the consequences. And you add in other variables. I was a product, or what many people may see a product of my environment. But I take full responsibility. I still made that decision and placed myself in that box. So when that occurred, I like I said, I was on my knees, and I felt it was like a hard reset. Me just saying, that's enough. I'm not going to ever contribute to anything that not only destroys other life forms, but also destroys communities. So I made that decision then and there. Cold turkey. Well, cold pressed beets, per se.
Cold tofurkey. That's right.
Yeah. There we go. Cold tofurkey.
I love the story about you as a kid telling the other kids not to throw rocks. Like, to me, that... you are that same person still. You're just growing up and you're doing it on a more mature level, but you're essentially saying exactly the same thing. And the whole Clark Kent was vegan thing, like, to me, that's exactly what Superman would do. I mean, to see him look at a factory farm, you know, how would he react? So how did you get to that conclusion? Was it what I just said, sort of? You just figured that Clark Kent / Superman would do the right thing? And didn't you have to get DC's permission, by the way?
Well, I mean, to go a little bit more deeper into that, it falls a little bit more intersectionally into a community. It's funny because I was just talking about this the other day. Before Black Panther came out, before Blade, before a lot of inspiring superheroes of color was put on such a large scale, I grew up in a timeline in the 80s where the only superheroes we had to look up to in the hood and or any city, inner city kid, Chicago to L.A., you name it, from my timeline of the 80s will vouch for me and feel the same way probably. But we just had Superman. We had Superman, we had Bruce Lee, and we had Optimus Prime. Those were some pretty inspiring characters from a kid from the inner city and the city in general, because we didn't have those positive male role models. And in my scenario, I didn't have any positive role model. I grew up without my father. All the males in my family were drug dealers or gang members, and they was doing their thing. Unfortunately, half of them are either dead or the rest are rotting away in jail right now as we speak. So that's a little bit of my background with respect to any positive male role models. And Superman, to me, represented totally opposite what I was accustomed to seeing. Okay, so when I see Superman just taking up from everybody and defending bullies, I admired that as a kid. I feel like that had a huge impact on me as far as my own growth and development, because I didn't have a male that put me in timeout to say, yo, that's not cool, man. We got to do this. We got to do that. Because when I was going out in the streets, the coolest thing to be was a drug dealer slinging dope, rocking $1,000 leather coats, rocking $5,000 chains, you know, Rolexes, riding around in luxury cars that, you know, was very expensive, you name it, and popping Cristal to, you name it, whatever the hottest or the most in-demand popular liquors were at the time. That's what it was about. I mean, clubbing at the age of 16 and doing all of that So I feel like that seed was planted early in the 80s for me, and it had an impact. It kind of balanced me and helped in a lot of ways later on with my thought process. And when I came up with that creative design of Clark Kent was vegan, it just so happened I ran across and I just Googled, like, Superman vegan, like, or the superheroes that are plant-based, and nothing came up. And then I was just trying to look at different origin stories. And in 2006, what came up across my searches was that in 2006, DC Comics, 2006-2007, rewrote his origin story based on that timeline. He was a young man developing his powers, his superpowers, and he flew to Africa. And he was flying over gazelles and wrestling with lions. And he sent the email home to his mom, Martha Kent, saying, "Hey, I know you can't understand this energy. I know you can't probably understand this, how I feel, but I see this aura around them. And I know that's kind of hard to explain to Grandpa Kent," which is her mom, which is her dad or whatever he was talking about, "that your son is a vegetarian." They put that in black and white, vegetarian. And if you've been around this community for a long time, everyone knows back then in 2006, in that timeline, vegetarian was used interchangeably with vegan, because vegan was more like almost like a terrorist word. No one was proud to be called a vegan at the time. So I felt like the writers, when they used that term, that was their soft way of saying, "Hey, he's plant-based, he's vegan, but we're not going to say vegan, he's vegetarian." Right. And that's the argument behind that. Number one, it was written by DC Comics. Number two, if you're a true Superman nerd and been following that guy's journey as much as I have since I was a kid, everyone knows, people think his weakness is kryptonite. He can actually still do some damage when kryptonite is near him. But his biggest weakness is he just cannot destroy his own enemies. He can't destroy nothing. He just don't see that. He doesn't have that desire in him to do that. He knows what he's capable of, how powerful he is, and he just will never take advantage or do harm to anything if he can, including his own enemies. That's why he's always dropping them off in jail or putting them in some type of prison and shooting them out to space forever. So that's number two. Number three, get his energy from the sun. Number four, he's an alien. Aliens don't need to eat meat, and vegans like to refer to themselves as aliens. And number five, if we creatively will say he is vegan based on those factors, and we're going to own that as far as crazy and weirdos is concerned. As far as I see it, he's a vegan, so
you really gave this some thought. With that,
yeah, anyone got a problem with that? They can holler at me.
Nice. All right. Well, you mentioned male role models. So I kind of want to talk about men and about how society sees men. And eating meat is portrayed in society as being manly, and having steaks and digging into dead flesh. And on the other hand, empathy is portrayed as a feminine trait. Like, if you care, it's almost you're soft. So if you can maybe just touch on that, and how you're what you're doing to dispel that myth, and how we can as vegans and as activists get more men to really care, to give a shit, and to go vegan. Because if you look at the split, it's 70-80% of vegans are women, and what can we do to kind of level the scales a little more?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I will say this. I haven't had much pushback from men, from the most masculine men to the most feminine men, truly have supported my mission. And I have tons of omnivore masculine men, tons that follow me and inspired by my fitness, but they would never troll me per se, or question me, or challenge me, even when I do actively speak out about the industry that they continue to support to this day. So I think I think what my own experience and the reason behind that is because And truthfully being told, that's actually how my presence in social media grew such to a large platform. Because here it was, you had this African-American man that was the total opposite of what you would stereotype as a vegan male. I wasn't white. I wasn't middle-aged. I wasn't doing some ultra runs and super-duper marathons. I wasn't just skinny or what they consider pale. I was the opposite. Thick, strong, powerful, very vocal, no nonsense. And I had, I guess, what they would consider an edge to them. They can identify with me because at the end of the day, they view me as like, he's a guy's guy. Like, I like a good beer. I like a good vegan burger. I like to watch football. You know, I like watching boxing match. So I'm not removed from some of the things that they like. And I think because of that, that really connects with a lot of men that have followed me over the years. And it's the same thing that goes for some of your more vocal leaders in other sub communities, whether it be the LGBT community. It's I can't go in that community because I'm not a part of it. But there are strong advocates that can, and that community identifies with them and will listen to them. Just like I can go on the street corner and talk that street slang to some young brother and get on his level with respect to letting him know, like, this ain't cool. You're slinging, this ain't cool. You're eating that poison on what these people, quote, trying to serve you in your community. I can hit them with different lines of information that somebody from a background of suburban America cannot identify with. And the same thing, there's things I can't do in other communities. So I think what is important for us as a vegan community, we need to realize our strengths and our weaknesses. There's things that we can send out men and women in different communities to advocate and really promote the message. Just like you have me, you can send me to different communities. We need to use that. The way I view this whole community is like, it's like the Justice League meets Avengers, meaning you have people with different capes flying around. I might not agree with Iron Man. I might not agree with Batman, but hey, it's somebody that it looks up to them and listening to their message, whether I agree with that strategy or not. So we all are a bunch of, in my eyes, some inspiring folks that are doing all we can to shift that conversation and to really inspire folks. So, to answer your question, that's what we need to do. We just need to identify our strengths and our weaknesses in terms of the multiple activists we have out there that can really go into those situations and those communities that need it, because that young man and that young woman can look up to them and say, he's one of me or she's one of me, and I'll listen to what they have to say.
Wow, I love it. There are so many superheroes out there too. So now if you're ready to take the shoes and take the cape of a superhero, just jump in and do it, right? Try it out, whichever one you identify with.
Yeah, for sure, man. I mean, there's people that identify with the raw community. They think that's great. That's inspiring. You know, those guys that like to go to those potlucks and the fruit stocks. And then there's people that's turned off by that, or they just like to be in the gym and be gym rats, or the endurance community. They want to go run 80 miles in one day and say, you know what, I'm better than those guys. So, I mean, it's just so many different ways you can find your inspiration and so many strong advocates in this community. We just need to understand that there's not a perfect way, but we do have enough faces and enough personalities that can definitely do some serious moving with respect to the omnivores in those communities I just identified.
That's great. So what's the deal with protein? Because I know that's a huge part of the, you know, people not giving it a chance, and you represent such a great counterexample. And you said that you live on fruit primarily. How much protein is in fruit? I would think you would need beans and nuts and legumes like that's it all day long to look, have the stature that you have.
Yeah, so bean, you know, the beans, the legumes and the rice and all that part of the carbs of I survived off of that in prison. So meaning all I did was eat rice and beans and oatmeal. I ate so much oatmeal that you probably won't catch me eating oatmeal ever again. Unless it's, it has to be something very, it's very creative. I ate a lot of that in prison. That was a bulk of my diet. And again, I didn't know what was going to happen to me with respect to prison. I used to swap out my meat protein for my cellies, what we call cellies, which is our cellmates that live in the same cell as us. I would give them my meat portion while they in return, they would give me their carbs, whether it be pasta, potatoes, rice and beans. And they used to look at me like I was a crazy and I was a weirdo, hence the name Crazy and Weirdo. And they used to just look at me like, Dom, you sure, man? Like, you sure? You don't want this chicken? And I'm like, no, good. And in the back of my mind, it's poison to me. And I'm telling them, you know, I'm advocating. I'm like, yo, that's poison. They're putting this in our body. We're just not designed to eat it. And it's like, shit, fuck out of here. I'm going to eat this. Here, you can take this pasta. You can take this rice and beans. And cool, let's see what happens. And it just so happened my body transformed. I went from weighing like 260, 257 pounds, got all the way down to like 180, 185. Just shredded, abs showing, strong. I was one of the strongest guys on a pound, lifting weights. I was deadlifting over 500, repping like it was nothing, squatting over 400 like it was nothing, benching 315 like it was nothing. Just doing some crazy, amazing thing, curling 80-pound dumbbells like it was nothing, and I couldn't explain it because again, that was not my motivation. But all I know is, tons of that carbs that I was eating played a key role. I was eating them up, eating a lot of bananas, like I said, and a lot of oatmeal, and my body just started thriving naturally. It it happened so quick. It happened in like 90 days, instant transformation, like within 90 days. It was just phenomenal. So when I hear people say that they can't go vegan or, well, what about the protein? I'm like, dude, if I could do it in prison without supplements or anything, you can do it out here. And you guys have supplements. You have foods, whether it be alternative meats, that can help transition you into this specific lifestyle. Protein is so overrated. Honestly, I get anywhere between 50 to 100 grams of protein. But there's days like today. I've been drinking cold-pressed watermelon juice. And I had a few of them that was mixed with kale and celery. But that's all I've been, just drinking fluids all day. And that's less than 50 grams. And I'm okay. And I ran 7 miles today. And when I get off this podcast with you guys, I'm getting ready to go back to the gym because I got the energy to go do back and arms today. So
you're going to run 7 miles, do a podcast, and then go to the gym.
I already did 7 miles before the podcast.
Right.
I did. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. So I got to get my strength training in for tonight. Because I've been working all day, so I haven't had a chance to hit the strength part of this of my day. Strength is very important. Protein is overrated. The good news is I feel like historically in our community, people would question it. Like, well, where do you get your protein from? That used to be the cliche question for all vegan athletes or any men that they found to be of a big size. But I feel like the younger generation in 2018, I rarely get that question when I'm having keynote talks or I'm on panels. That's the last question I get. The most question I get is, well, what do you eat specifically? You know, not where do you get your protein? Because they understand protein is pretty much in everything you consume, biologically speaking. There's plenty of protein in fruits. And there's plenty of nutrients in fruits as well, your key aminos and all of that.
Yeah, the only people on the planet that get a protein deficiency are the people that don't eat enough calories that their body needs. Like, that's you don't see people, and I've never met anyone in my life with a protein deficiency. So Kevin, how many workouts have you done today, Kev?
Oh man, he's making me feel terrible about myself.
So, okay, Dom. So, last month, February, you were featured by PETA for Black History Month as one of the top Black vegan activists changing the world now. That was the title. So, what was that like? What did that mean to you to be featured not only as an activist but as a person of color that's making a difference? And I was just wondering if you could see any any parallels through, you know, different social justice movements and, you know, whether it's civil rights or it's animal rights.
it's definitely a lot of similar things happening with respect to these animals that happen to different ethnicities that went through different struggles and oppression and killing, you name it, lynching, all of it, from, especially with respect to the slave trade and African Americans and Africans that went through it, and some are still going to this day. But like I said at my last NYU talk, someone asked that, maybe here's the thing. I can communicate that, the strong connection and the strong similarities there, because I have a background. I am a background African-American man. But someone from a different ethnicity, it's a thin line you're walking when you make those comparisons, because maybe you specifically that's talking about it, or your ancestors simply did not go through the same challenges that my ancestors went through. So you had to be careful and very mindful when you speak about a lot of those sensitive issues, because it's still, that wasn't really too long ago, if you think about it. Those issues are still very, to this day, causing a lot of challenges across the economy with a lot of African Americans, big time. And we're still trying to play catch up. When I read that, and they highlighted me as the one of the Black vegan activists, it's not my first time that they feature me, but I was honored. I appreciate the recognition, but as I mentioned to everyone that I posted about it, I think we need more diversity in this community, and let's keep this conversation going. It shouldn't have to, the recognition amongst my peers and other people in this community shouldn't be limited to just 1 month out of the year, okay? Because there are many different faces. It's all sizes, shapes, all ages, all different backgrounds of people. Even to my folks up there, my Canadian, I love my Canadians. There's a lot of incredible Canadian activists doing some incredible things. And I think it needs to be balanced there, where some of the bigger platforms truly highlight it, not based off of just trying to get people promote that person, but some of those people have some incredible ideas, and you never know which young activist or who's reading that article they may inspire to adopt that idea. And then you have a union going on, you have a teamwork going on, and we can put forth that effort with respect to activism. So, yes, I'm humbled by it, but I just wish there was more diversity and more recognition, showing more vegans of color from all backgrounds on some of these larger platforms. Because every time I look up, what are we talking about, another vegan magazine or another vegan blog or some of the bigger vegan YouTube news outlets is highlighting vegans that are not vegans of color. Some of those guys are less than 2 years vegan, and they're repeating things that me, that I've been doing for 6-7 years. You know what I mean? So it just makes you wonder, like, you know, is there a bigger problem underlining there, if that makes sense?
I like that answer. So I'd like to ask you what your gym routine looks like and the next time you will be in Toronto, so that our fans who are primarily in the GTA can come up to you and meet you and ask you some more questions about your routine and about your activism.
Yeah, my routine, just so you guys know, the beautiful thing with social media, you can follow it now. Meaning I will, I have in the past, but I'm going to be more active and show you guys what I do on my YouTube, show you guys what I do on the new Instagram handle that I formed called the Running Herd, which is a running and training group. And also what I eat in a day, Eat What Elephants Eat is a whole different brand, a whole different platform. So we're going to show you some guys, some cool things, but my routine, typically if I'm training for a triathlon, I typically do about 10 to 12 different endurance races per year. And when I'm training for a triathlon, that consists of waking up at 5 a.m. to do some endurance training, whether it be, hitting the pool or doing a biking for 2 hours or doing what we call a brick bike and then run, then I'll shower, and then I'll, my work day begins. And I'm fueling throughout the day on fruit smoothies, raw smoothies, and that consists of 8 to 12 ounces of mason jars. I'm fueling on that every 1 to 2 hours, depending on my appetite. And that's kicking up my metabolism. And anytime you run in the morning, it's like a shot of coffee. You're going to have your metabolism running at a very high rate. So by the time lunch hour comes out of my work day, I do my strength training mainly during that time, midday, because I don't fraternize. I don't goof off on my lunch break. I use that specifically for training. And in the afternoons, I work, finish up my work schedule. And then and then once I get off of work around 4 or 5, I have set hours. Even though I left corporate America, I still apply the same formula. And in the evenings, once I get off, I am training and doing either calisthenics or doing another run. So that's what my training looks like. And again, I want your users to need to understand this. I'm not doing it to look a certain way. I'm truly only doing it because I have so much energy and I just need an outlet for it. That's my way of, that's my stress relief. That's when I unload my stress at and unload all that energy that's built up inside of me, up in the gym or outside the gym, on the trail run or biking outside, you name it.
All right, I'm going to the gym right after this. You talked
about that. I'm wondering what your interaction is like in the, you know, with athletes, with bodybuilders that, you know, are either not vegan or not plant-based, or even the ones that are plant-based but are doing it for health. So what's your experience been like, you know, interacting with them, helping them see, you know, non-humans and the suffering they're going through, and you know, how do you kind of bridge that gap and you know, get the plant-based to go vegan and get you know, non-vegans to take a look and open their eyes?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Anybody that knows me, I approach the plant-based athletes just as the same way I would approach an omnivore athlete. They just haven't made that connection, meaning I treat them as such and talk to them about the ethical side. The good news is a lot of them are getting it and they're seeing me lead by example. It's important for me to continue to do that, lead by example, but I educate them at every opportunity I get, especially those that have the bigger platform, that it's important, very important and critical for you to communicate to your community and your audience the ethical side, because a lot of people, I mean, statistics show this, they'll cut weight, they look good, and then they'll go back to eating meat, and that's not doing any these beautiful creatures any justice. So I approach them and I educate them. I have side conversations with some of the bigger influencers all the time, and I'm happy to say a lot of them, because of my talks with them and their respect for me, have been a little bit more vocal. Same thing goes with the omnivores. Communicate to them the ethics. I always talk about ethical stuff first. The health comes next, and then followed by the environment. To me, we just need to continue to assertively educate people about the ethical side. The health is wonderful, but we all know the health is not as important with respect to keeping and retaining that person to be vegan, unless they truly understand what they're doing to that other living life form.
Yeah, I believe that that's how the revolution really takes hold and creates a tipping point. That's how we get laws changed. We have to use the ethical argument, because this is an inevitability in terms of the environment, in terms of our health, but really the ethical argument is the key. So we have to keep spreading that message. So thank you. Ben, do you have any final thoughts before we wrap up?
No, thanks so much, Don, for coming on. I do have you know, a bunch more questions, but I guess we're running out of time.
I guess we got to do a part two maybe in the future. I'm down if you guys are, so don't worry.
Yeah, part two. Yeah, that'd be great. Maybe we'll put Kevin through a workout during the podcast.
Yeah, when I come up there, we can probably do a quick workout in the future. I'll be up there in Toronto in June. That's my next scheduled day. I'm in talks now to do Ottawa Veg Fest. I'm definitely committed to doing Niagara Fall Veg Fest, and I'm also going to be doing the Toronto Veg Fest, and I'll also be at the Toronto Beer Fest. So one of those times, we'll be up there about 4 or 5 times this year. Let's get together, get a workout in.
I'm going to hold you to that.
You can hold me to it.
That's right.
One thing you'll know about me, I'm a man of my word. If I give my word, we'll do it.
All right. So, fantastic.
Yeah. Well,
okay. Now I have to ask, because you're still on. Wait, do you do push-pull legs?
Push-pull legs.
Is that your workout routine? Like
no,
three days
you mean,
on?
You mean, You mean calisthenics in general?
No, so I mean when you do weight training, like day one would be push and day two would be pull, day three would be legs, and then you repeat and then take one day off?
Nope, I take no days off. I break it up.
Okay, wow.
I take no days off unless I'm traveling to the West Coast and for some reason, you know, it's a 5-hour flight and I might have left at 4 o'clock in the afternoon because I was too busy all day working and packing. I am a last minute packer. I do not pack in advance. I'm bad at that. I procrastinate. So by the time I land in Cali, you know, if I can get to a gym to get a quick run in or something, I'm all about it. But I break it up. Every week I break it up. There's no specific, the only thing that is consistent is the actual exercises itself in terms of that. But I sometimes break it up where Monday I might do chest and back, or I might do chest and legs. Tuesday I might do shoulders and back, or do arms and back. So I break it up every week. As long as I consistently hit those body parts twice minimum per week, that's good for me. And that has nothing to do with calisthenics, pull-ups and push-ups and dips, and that has nothing to do with cardiovascular routines.
Wow, so you got to hit each muscle group twice a week. Yeah, that's what Arnold said. I have his encyclopedia.
Oh, I didn't even know he said that. Yeah, it's not that I got to personally. It's that I want to.
Gotcha.
I'm from the old school, and I have all this energy. The thing is, people tend to not realize that when you do have a primary raw vegan lifestyle with respect to the diet, like I consume and drink a lot of my calories, you're bouncing off the wall. You know, you have all this energy off the wall. Like if you drink watermelon as a substitute instead of coffee in the morning and you do that consistently, you're going to find yourself bouncing off the wall. So I go to the gym as an outlet, not because I'm trying to look a certain way or trying to achieve a certain physical appearance. I'm not that much into myself. That's why I never went on stage to take my shirt off in a bikini. That's just not my thing. You know, that's just not my thing. I'm not that vain, man. I'm just not into that. But the reason why I am as physically active, because the power of the fruit. I'm more fruitarian than anything. My diet, regardless if I'm training for a triathlon or not, is over 50% raw fruits. And that alone, for me, my body responds incredible with that type of diet. It really does.
Okay. This was exciting to have you on, Dom. You know, you're almost like, I consider you like a mythbuster. That, you know, there's all these stereotypes of vegans and veganism, and you're shattering them all. And we appreciate you coming on the show. And you know, anybody, you know, they can hear your voice, but anybody that's listening, look up Dom and you can see, you know, it's you don't need to consume animal products to be in amazing shape and to make a difference.
I really appreciate the fellas. I really do. Thank you so much. And I know you guys are doing incredible things, and thank you to the users out there. Look forward to connecting with everyone when I come to Toronto and anyone in every other city. Thank you so much for having me on the show. Really, really humbled and appreciate this.
Thank you, Dom. Thank you for being here. You are a leader, and we appreciate you standing up for animals. They're amongst the most innocent, vulnerable beings on the planet, and they need a voice. So thank you for being that voice.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks, Dom.
All right. Talk to you guys soon.
And we're back. All right, Ben, what'd you think about that? That was a great interview.
Yeah, well, we always come back and you throw it to me and say, you know, what'd you think? And I talk about it for a while, but I'm going to turn the tables today because, you know, you followed Dom for a long time and you're a big fan of his. So Kevin, what did you think?
Like that. Well, I think, when you were talking about what makes a man, and to me, that's sort of what I think about when I think of Dominic Thompson, Dom Z, because when you say a man is someone who, I don't know if you think of it like, does he trim his beard with a chainsaw? Does he chop down trees with an axe? Does he wrestle grizzly bears? You know, what makes a man? And I think it's someone who stands up for the voiceless, for the defenseless, for the needy. It's the guy who tells the other guy to stop throwing rocks at the dog or the other kid or the other kitten or whatever it is. To me, what makes a man is the willingness to protect and fight for the less fortunate. And Domzy is that person to me. So, like, there aren't that many, I guess, individuals in the animal rights community where I feel this strongly about, you know, this person being a leader in that regard. And it's missing. Like, we need more of that. We need more of that, because I can't tell you how many times I've been to social gatherings, and that's, even though it's not said, that's the implication, that you're less of a man because you don't eat animals. But in fact, the exact opposite is true. Like, me being courageous enough to stand up for what I believe is right, I think makes me more of a man than those who simply follow the customs and traditions. So, I love Domzy for that, and I really loved this interview. It was great.
I think a lot of the big problem too is that, you know, a man is a certain way, a woman is a certain way. It's just this crazy concept that this is, you know, even the concept of being manly, like, to be a good human being, you just, first of all, stop creating unnecessary harm, and then second of all, stand up for the unnecessary, you know, against the unnecessary harm that's being created. It doesn't matter, you know, what's manly, what's feminine. It's just what makes you a good person. And yeah, what Dom's doing is, it's pretty inspiring. And he's, you know, he's a definition of somebody that's standing up, you know, on the right side of justice.
Yeah. Like, when you see a group of men, to me, the alpha is the guy who says, no, stop that, knock that off. You know, that's not right. Don't do that.
Yeah, even though we don't need to be the status quo, you know, let's do what's right, not what everybody else is doing. And you know what? In our society, men are more followers than women, and we're so afraid to be different. And that's the, you know, I've mentioned it before. That's the biggest obstacle that we face in animal rights, and our society. It seems like men so often are just so afraid to be different and get made fun of, that we, you know, they avoid anything that's not seen as, you know, society's manly. Yeah. And Dom's, you know, he's shattering those myths. So it's cool. And, you know, every time someone says, oh, but you need protein, and then, oh, but that's not a complete protein. And then it's just, I'll just be like, listen to this interview, or just show them a picture of Dom and say, look at this guy. Okay. No, shut up.
Yeah, there are a bunch of people now who can fill that gap. There's just so many vegan athletes who are amazingly ripped, just totally jacked and ripped. Yeah. So it's great.
There's a lot of plant-based athletes. We had Dom on because he is, like, you know, he said his focus isn't even health. It's not even focus. It's, you know, I can't create this unnecessary suffering. And then as a vegan, then he just happened to also become jacked.
Yeah, did you know about his background? It's pretty transformative.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah, it's a pretty inspiring story. So I'm glad he got into that.
Well, we had more questions for him, but we'll have to wait till part two. We'll see when we can get him back on the show, because he is certainly going to remain in the animal rights movement for a long time, and we are very happy about that. We need more people like Dom in the movement. So let's see, what's in the news for today? What happened this week?
Oh, are we going to talk about the Beyonce controversy?
Oh, what's the controversy?
Oh, well, what's the news? And then we'll get to the controversy.
Well, I did hear that she asked her millions of followers to go plant-based with her for at least a temporary period. I don't know if she's asking them to go permanently plant-based, but I think she's doing it for health reasons, and she's asking her millions of followers through social media to join her on this this plant-based adventure.
Yeah, so the issue is she's telling people to go plant-based, and then all the vegan communities, you know, you hear people saying, oh, Beyonce is asking people to go vegan, and Beyonce is going to go vegan. Well, first of all, she's doing it for a short period of time. It's supposed to be long term. And she's someone that wears fur and, you know, dead skin of other beings. So I'm just, you know, let's be careful. Yeah, it's great that she's saying, you know, let's, you know, try plant-based. She's done it before. So it's not a negative. I don't think it's a bad thing that she's doing it, but I always am cautious about using celebrities to, and it happens all the time. You see every week there's a new, oh, so-and-so is now vegan. Oh, so-and-so is now vegan. So-and-so is now vegan. And then it's 4 months later. Well, so-and-so is not vegan anymore. And this person is not vegan anymore. They never really were vegan. So it's, you know, it's great that maybe they're going to eat plant-based and it shows that it's trending in the right direction, but let's not, you know, I'm trying to think of a, you know, hitch your wagon to them, but that's not a vegan saying, but you know what I mean? Like, let's not use them to portray our message, because they might show how difficult it is. They're going to make it look like it's difficult. Oh, I could only do it for a few months. Now I needed my steak.
Well, I see your point. I definitely understand why you're a little reluctant and hesitant to jump on the Beyonce wagon, as you call it. But I think the more people who are introduced to or exposed to a plant-based diet, even if it's for a short period of time, even if it's for one day, I'll argue that point. That's a good thing. And it's, and as you mentioned, you agree, this is mostly a good thing for sure. We want more
people. It's not a negative.
Yeah,
not,
exactly. Like,
don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to say that, oh, this is horrible, I wish she wasn't doing it. I'm just saying, let's not get too crazy. Let's not, you know, get too far ahead of ourselves. Like, oh, yay, now this is it. This is going to take us to the end because now Beyonce is going to try it for 20 days.
This is kind of like giving McDonald's a hug after they introduce a McVegan burger.
yeah, you know, we seem to have this conversation in many different ways.
Well,
but yeah, it's a positive, but it's, you know, yeah, like McDonald's having a vegan burger, great, I'm happy, but that doesn't mean everything else they're doing is okay. And Beyonce walking around wearing fur, not really the image that, you know, of veganism that most of us would want to be portrayed.
I get it. I think she just needs to be approached by the right person, maybe Dom Thompson, and have a proper conversation, you know, and just get her to be awakened by the ethical arguments, you know, of what her actions are doing to these innocent animals. So
all right, well, let's reach out to Dom and ask him if he can get in touch with Beyonce and Jay-Z and try and convince her.
Good plan. All right, so what have you got for me today?
All right. It's one of our favorite excuses. So today's excuse, for anybody that's new, I throw an excuse at Kevin why people can't be vegan, or, you know, the excuses that they use, and they're all excuses because there's no logical reason. And then Kevin usually just slays it. So today's excuse is lions. What about lions? You're going to tell a lion not to kill an antelope?
What does a lion have to do with me? Can I leave it there?
Hey, this is what people use.
I know.
Okay?
I get it. I will be as generous as I can to the argument put forth, which is animals eat animals. We are also animals, and it's just part of the cycle of life, and therefore it's nature, and we should be able to eat whatever we can catch and eat. Listen, a lion is an obligate carnivore. It has no choice. It has to eat some kind of meat. It has to eat other animals. It has to do this, otherwise it will die. It won't be able to sustain itself. And it's not a moral agent. It doesn't have the capacity to make moral decisions. In the same way that children are not moral agents, they don't know what they do. Same thing for animals. Humans, adults, are moral agents. We have the capacity to decide between moral rightness and moral wrongness. And simply because lions eat animals, it has no bearing on our actions. It has no logical implications on what we should be doing with our actions, with our lives today in this current state of affairs. Like, we don't have to eat gazelles. We don't have to eat zebras. Simply because we can, You know, we have the ability to do so. We've created guns and traps and things to be able to kill these animals and then eat them. Doesn't mean that we ought to. So there's a very simple distinction there. Is does not, or the ability to do it doesn't mean that we ought to do it. And there are all sorts of things that lions do that we shouldn't be doing either. Don't they, you know, fight each other in the wild and eat each other's young? And
They'll often kill the weak, right? Like the weak litter, they'll, you know, kill them off. And
they sniff each other's butts, I've heard, you know, like dogs do. Like, there's so much to what creates an animal's behavior. And you can take any animal and look at them and say, all right, what makes this animal unique? But the real question is, what kind of bearing should it have on our behavior? You know, just because a lion kills a gazelle, does that mean I ought to kill one?
It doesn't. Judging our behavior by a lion is ridiculous. But no, you touched on it. It's a matter of, you know, what's necessary and what do we need to survive? We don't need to kill to survive. A lion needs to kill to survive. If they don't, they will die. If we don't, we'll probably be healthier. So it's right. It's a ridiculous one, but it's one that people use, so we throw it out there. Also, I want to mention that when a lion kills, they do so with their fangs, their claws. They don't have any tools or weapons. And, you know, I'd like to see someone run up and catch a gazelle and bite into them with their, you know, massive canines and kill them, and then they eat every part of that carcass.
Yeah, raw.
And they eat it raw. They don't have to cook it. The reason that, you know, our ancestors were mostly vegetarian until we had fire, until we had tools and weapons to be able to kill and then take that flesh and cook it. Because if we ate it raw, it would probably make us sick and we die. If a lion eats it raw, they get all their nutrients, they're healthy. So yeah, comparing ourselves to lions is just silly.
Well, the other thing to compare is our digestive tracts. The length of a digestive tract inside of a lion versus a digestive tract of a human, it's just no comparison. It's so much longer in a human, which means if you eat meat, it's going to be in your system breaking down for a lot longer compared with a lion, which it's not in its system for that long. That's why they're able to eat raw, rotting carcasses and not get sick, because it's not in their body as long. So there's just so many differences, biological differences. We are not obligate carnivores at all.
I think to just focus on it, the simplest terms, like you said, what's necessary.
Yeah, for sure.
That's what it all comes down to. That's how I define veganism. It's not creating unnecessary harm. It's that simple. And for us, that's unnecessary harm because we don't need to do it.
Well said. All right. So today's tip of the day. Or sorry, all right. You've got a new one, right?
Yeah, a new activist tip that people can do. So I wanted to focus on this one because personally, I'll be honest, I'm not very good at it. So today's tip is just it's very common. It's what you see people do all the time, is just leafletting. So you get a bunch of, you know, little leaflets, and that come from, you know, you can get them from PETA, Mercy for Animals, the SAVE movement, wherever. And just, you know, go hand them to people and start a conversation. Maybe it's something on that they'll read and go, oh, you know, I never realized that before. Maybe they won't even really care, but they'll look at it and it'll just, you know, something will be in the back of their mind. And the next time they get another leaflet, it's creating this awareness. Personally, like I said, I'm not very good at it. And I feel kind of ashamed as an activist that I'm not good at it. I just have troubles, you know, getting in front of people and just kind of their space and handing them something. Like I will do a speech in front of 3,000 people, no problem. And I won't be nervous, but one-on-one, me jumping in front of someone, the conversation after, no problem, but actually just jumping in front and saying, here, take this. I struggle with it. It's hard for me. What about you?
Well, I definitely get nervous in front of 3,000 people when I'm speaking. I think most people do, and that's your superhero power then, for sure.
So how come I can speak in front of a whole bunch of people? Like I have no problem. I could just do, you know, a live video wherever. But when it's one-on-one, why is that so much more difficult? And some people are amazing at it, like, you know, like Jenny McQueen we had on, and my friend Mo Markham and Mary Chris Staples. And like, I've seen these people that are just superstars at leafletting, and yeah, they strike up conversations, but I got to get over it. I just got to go out one day. I'm going to go with one of them and be like, all right, teach me your ways.
Well, I would also be in the same camp as you. I would be more likely to give a speech. It's not to say that I wouldn't get nervous or be nervous when I'm doing it, but I would be more likely to do that than to hand an individual a leaflet, a pamphlet. I know it's crazy. It's not rational, but I think it's this. I think it's that it's a much more personal, intimate interaction. Whereas when you're speaking to a crowd, when you're speaking, you know, at a podium, it's to the world, so to speak, and not necessarily to one individual. And when you hand one individual a pamphlet, it might just be a little more difficult for some people to do that. Although the interaction itself, and I think this speaks volumes about the effectiveness of this particular tip, it's so much more intimate and so much more personal that you get to talk to the people. And I know, I'm blanking on his name now. His name is Vic something. He's been doing vegan outreach for years. And I remember him saying, if they give me any kind of a negative energy, then I don't talk to them about the advocacy. I just talk to them about them. I get to know them. You know, I put out my hand, I shake their hand, I look them in the eye, and I say, how you doing, man? You know, it's a human to human experience, and they get to know them. They get to know a little bit about where they're from, their family, what they like to do. And the advocacy sort of speaks for itself just in virtue of being there. So I think that is somehow more effective if we could have more of those individual one-on-one intimate conversations about what we're trying to do here, which is, you know, look, animals are more important than what we're currently, you know, giving them in terms of treatment, in terms of moral respect. And I think that people are more likely to listen on an individual basis. But yeah, it's hard, man. I can't do it just the same as you.
Okay. Here's what we're going to do then. You and I, this summer, we have to meet up with maybe Jenny or Mary Chris or someone. We'll go in downtown Toronto or somewhere in Toronto, and we'll just go do it. We'll just get the courage and we'll just go out and we'll start leafletting. Because like you said, it is very effective. And anybody listening, if you can do it, just, you know, do it. You can get these leaflets. And, you know, and even if you're too nervous to do it, just do it. If Kevin and I will do it, and then you can do it too. We'll all get over this fear.
I will do it with you. Absolutely. That would be fun to do it the first time together. I have done other activism, but never done vegan activism like this. So that's for a different story, I guess. We say don't get political here.
No, you say it.
All right, so that wraps up today's episode. We hope you enjoyed our episode today. We hope you enjoyed the interview with Dominic Thompson. Very inspiring. Next week, episode 21, we will have who on the show?
Yeah, we're going deep undercover with Cody Carlson. So we're going to learn about the world of undercover investigations, something that obviously you are very familiar with. So, you know, the three of us will have a chat, and we'll learn what it takes, you know, to go undercover, what it's like, you know, what you see, and then what it's like mentally is a lot of the, you know, what I'm curious about, how it affects you know, the person. So both you and Cody have a lot of experience with that. So I'm looking to learn a lot next week.
Yeah, Cody's a good friend of mine. We definitely keep in touch because we have a lot in common. We've gone through a lot of the same experiences. And he worked for Mercy for Animals, which is one of the organizations I also worked for. So yeah, we're going to be talking to Cody next week. Can't wait for that. And thank you guys again for listening. As always,
live vegan.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Live Vegan Podcast.